Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 20th of January. The first hour of our program today, we talk about the results of yesterday's Massachusetts Senate election, the win, and this was for the seat that Teddy Kennedy occupied for many, many years. The win by a Republican senator-elect now, Scott Brown. The question of this hour is, what does this mean for health care reform, which the late Senator Kennedy had called the cause of his life? We'll be talking with three guests, three different perspectives this hour. Helen Ann Halpin, professor of health policy and director of the Center for Health and Public Policy Studies at the University of California, Berkeley School of Public Health. She really knows health care reform and has been on this subject for months and months and months. Professor Susan Giamma will join us from the Political Science Department at Marquette University, author of Markets and Medicine, The Politics of Healthcare Reform in Britain, Germany, and the United States. And James Marone will also be with us. He's a professor of political science and urban studies at Brown University and co-author of a wonderful book, The Heart of Power, Health and Politics in the Oval Office, in which he looks at how presidents from back to Truman through Barack Obama have looked at the issue of health care reform. We'll be welcoming phone calls because we have so many guests. Get your calls in early. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email address for you today is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Professor Helen Ann Halpin, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
I'm glad to be here, Kathleen.
Yeah, nice to have you here. Well, what happened yesterday?
The Democrats seem to have gotten caught with their pants down. I mean, I am just horrified. I can't believe the irony of the seat of Ted Kennedy's, who devoted himself to universal care for the American people, going to a Republican who's vowed to defeat it. It's just so disheartening. I'm angry. I'm frustrated. I feel like the party dropped the ball. How could this happen? Just a month ago, she was ahead by 30 points. She never apparently really defined her campaign or herself and gave her opponent that opportunity, and he was able to tap in on this anger that the American people are feeling, rightly so. The economy is still in terrible shape. Not that it's President Obama's fault, but they want jobs now, and Massachusetts already has health care reform, so they don't really lose much if the Congress doesn't enact this. So it seems to me that it's this enormous constellation of factors that has produced this result, and I don't think any of us are sure what the implications are yet. I think there are some scenarios where we can still get a bill, the Senate bill, and hopefully maybe do some more things to it through reconciliation and get some of the more liberal financing and exchange and public option potentially ideas through a reconciliation. But there's also another scenario that says the House Democrats won't go along with the Senate bill, and this party does not seem to have much discipline. Mm-hmm. So I am very concerned and hope that they will begin to get in line and at least get the Senate bill onto the president's desk soon.
As you say, it is so ironic that it happens in the state where Senator Kennedy, who died very recently, had made this the cause of his life. It is just terribly ironic.
It's tragic. It's tragic, and I can't even imagine. It was interesting, though, that there were some strange politics going on in Massachusetts because the Boston mayor didn't support Coakley. The Kennedys didn't support Coakley. There wasn't a single Kennedy on the stage last night with her. The party was so split in Massachusetts, and she had the support of the western part of the state that helped her win the primary, but she really didn't have a lot of the core old-line Democratic support in the state behind her, and that shows.
Mm-hmm. It makes you wonder. When you talk about the Democrats being in disarray, they probably took the seat for granted, but certainly Senator Kennedy knew that every vote counted and was, you know, everywhere shaking hands with people. chewing the fat with everybody, having all over the state. So it makes you wonder about how the Democrats are going to be able to forge ahead, not only on health care reform, which has been front and center for months and months now, but all these other issues as well.
The reality is one vote difference shouldn't matter that much. I mean, to have a 59 majority still in the Senate is a higher majority for the Democratic Party than, or for any party in recent history. I mean, that's still a tremendous majority. Why the Democrats cower at the threat of a filibuster is beyond me. I believe that if the Republicans want a filibuster, let them do it, and hopefully the public outcry would eventually be loud enough that the Senate could even change the rules on the filibuster. But 59 votes, I mean, for most things, you really only need 51. We do have majority rule. And the way the Senate is using and threatening the filibuster right now is completely warping the way the system was intended to work. Mm-hmm.
So what needs to happen? There's some confusion about when Senator Brown is going to be sworn in. Give me some scenarios here. Can the Senate pass the bill now? It can go to the president before he gets sworn in?
The Senate has passed their bill. So what could happen, potentially, the most expeditious route would be for the House tomorrow to vote on the Senate bill, pass it, and it could go to the president's desk immediately. Mm-hmm. There's no reconciliation. There's no conference committee. There's nothing. The Senate bill could be introduced as it is right now without any amendments and be voted on by the House of Representatives and go to the president's desk for signature. Now, whether Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer can get the Democrats at least 51% of them in line to do that, it's not clear. But it's going to take real leadership, I think, both from the White House and from the leadership in order to make that happen. Some people are suggesting that there's going to have to be a compromise, not in the Senate bill, but a promise, a firm promise made that the public option or a national exchange or a different method of financing beside the Cadillac tax on high-value health plans be included in a reconciliation bill that would go through at the same time, so at least the people in the House who've been holding out for these very specific provisions in the bill, we could garner their support and get them on board to pass the Senate bill as it is. But again, I don't know what the feasibility of that will be. I mean, the other thing is Barney Frank and Jim Webb are saying we shouldn't vote on anything until Brown is seated, which I think, frankly, is ridiculous, but they feel like they should honor the election and the will of the people and not do anything until he arrives. So I can't believe the Republicans would ever do that, but and I think it really, that's not very smart. Mm-hmm. But all it takes is a few people to balk at whatever the strategy is, and it unravels.
Right. It's been so tenuous all along. And what are the chances? I heard some people last night saying, skip the whole thing. Let's just start all over again.
Well, the thing is, we've already used way too much political capital to do something this big. I mean, what we could do is what's similar to what the Clintons did when they lost health care reform. They went back to the drawing table and got at least the children's health insurance program in. So it's likely that they might be able to pass a much smaller incremental package with reforms that specifically target select groups. But I don't think it's too late to hope for a more comprehensive bill.
All right. We've got tons of phone calls. Let's go to some of our callers. Brad is first. Hi, Brad.
Hi there. Lawrence McDonnell was on MSNBC last night talking about potential problems with trying to pass a bill through reconciliation, that it's not, there, I guess, a lot of pitfalls with it. And he's a former senator, so he really knows.
He's not a former senator. He was chief of staff for Senator Moynihan on the Finance Committee.
Yeah.
So he's a very powerful player in Washington, and he certainly knows how the Senate works.
And I'm wondering if any of the guests know, like liberals would like Medicare for all and just do that through reconciliation, but I wonder if any of the guests know the sticking point.
Well, I think that you could do that. What I've heard them, to put the whole bill, see, reconciliation only concerns things that affect the budget. So parts of the bill could be put into reconciliation, but regulation of the health insurance industry, for example, would not be an appropriate, reconciliation would not be an appropriate vehicle for that part of the bill. So you could pick out the the part that has budget implications and put that into reconciliation. And one of the biggest problems with reconciliation, I believe, is those provisions that are passed using that as the vehicle are only in effect for 5 years. So then they could, you know, potentially be overturned at that point. Mm-hmm. So it's not as permanent as passing a bill. And, you know, it's not clear that everyone would go along with doing a major reform like this as part of reconciliation. So, I mean, I think Lawrence O'Donnell usually knows what he's talking about. So I would, I didn't hear him, but would tend to agree with what his analysis.
Helen, what are the chances of the Democrats in the House and the House stepping up to the plate and saying, all right, we got to move, and they do vote, and they do it this week to pass the Senate bill?
I have no idea.
Who knows these days, right?
I have no crystal ball, Kathleen. Sorry.
All right. The other thing I'm wondering, I'm kind of confused about, and this is going to be analyzed to death over the next week, the huge nature of this vote. I'm wondering what place health care in this vote. Is it that people are saying you should have taken on the banks first, you should have taken on jobs first? Are they saying also we elected Scott Brown because he said that he was opposed to this health care reform? What is it exactly?
Well, I mean, part of it, I think it's a number of those things. First of all, you have to understand that Massachusetts enacted a very similar reform for its state several years ago, and it's been implemented fairly successfully. So this isn't as pressing an issue as it is for other states. Second, I think that the progressives have been very disappointed at what seems to have been the administration selling out to the pharmaceutical companies and the insurance industry, not holding these open negotiations and giving up the things that were promised in the campaign, and most notably the public option, that the reform just hasn't proceeded the way people wanted to, and some big name influential people like Howard Dean, who used to be head of the Democratic committee, and Arianna Huffington on the Huffington Post are saying, "Kill the bill." That this is not the bill that that we want. This is not the bill we were promised. And I think that resonates with a lot of people. I think there's also tremendous anger about. We've spent a whole year on health care reform,
yes.
Which in many ways means we haven't done a lot of other things. The job situation is dire. A statistic I saw the other night said 50% of working-age men are out of work.
Oh, my gosh.
This will produce tremendous anger and desperation almost. And what's so ironic is now that this Republican was seen as the change candidate.
Yeah. Thanks, Brad, for your call. Clyde from Denmark. Hi.
Hi. You sure have a smart guest there. She agrees with most everything that I would agree with.
I really think that we
shouldn't just have the threat of a filibuster. I think we should have a filibuster, because then that would really point up that the Republicans are the ones that are standing in the way of any kind of health care reform. And the American people, in spite of they're not agreeing with what kind of health care reform they want, they know that we have to have health care reform. And if you have a filibuster, make the Republicans stand up there and talk about it and make them point out that they're so against health care reform and they're so for all the insurance companies and drug companies, then we'd really see some change in this country and the Republicans would all get voted out of office.
Well, I don't know if we'll go that far, but I like your scenario, and I agree with you 100% that they shouldn't cower to the threat. Make the Republicans go through it, and let's see how that plays with America.
Thanks, Brad, for the call. Elizabeth from Wauwatosa. Hi.
Hello. My issue that I've noticed is the whole issue of abortion being the big red-letter word that is making everyone angry. People who are opposed to it and people who are in favor of choice. And when we pass this, regardless, how is that whole issue going to be defined and explained and angered people settled into acceptance?
Well, the way the Senate bill is written right now, you would be able to buy a policy that had coverage for abortion within the insurance exchange. But every exchange would also have to offer at least one policy for which there was not abortion coverage, so that people would be able to choose whether they wanted that coverage or not. Second, no federal funds could go towards the cost of the abortion part of the policy, and so people would have to find another way, either out of their pocket, probably, to pay for the abortion part of that coverage if they were eligible for federal subsidies. So it's a sort of a two-pronged, you'd still enable the choice, so people wouldn't have to be paying for abortion coverage if they didn't want it, they wouldn't have to get it if they didn't want, and no federal funds would go to pay for that coverage.
Thanks, Elizabeth, very much for the call. Helen, thank you so much. I'm sure we'll be
calling on
you again to figure all this out and to see what develops over the next few days. Thank you.
Thank you.
Helen Ann Halpin, professor of health policy and director of the Center for Health and Public Policy Studies at the University of California, Berkeley School of Public Health. We've had her on the show many times for months and months now as we've examined healthcare reform from so many different angles, and she is always up to speed on what bills are being considered, what the intricacies of those bills are, but as she said, she has no idea what's going to happen now. We have two other guests who will be joining us during the course of this hour. In just a moment, Susan Giamo, a professor in political science at Marquette University and author of Markets in Medicine, The Politics of Healthcare Reform in Britain, Germany, and the United States. And a bit later, the co-author of The Heart of Power, Health and Politics in the Oval Office. Our phone number remains the same, and your comments are pertinent, of course, all hour. We're focusing this hour on where healthcare goes now as a result of the victory by Senator-elect Scott Brown yesterday in Massachusetts, a traditionally very Democratic state. And the irony, of course, is that it was the seat that was held for so long by Ted Kennedy, who had called health care and reform of the nation's health care system the cause of his life. Our number, 800-486-8655. The email address, feel free to use that, is talk@WPR.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining our conversation now is Professor Susan Giamo, visiting assistant professor in political science at Marquette University, author of Markets in Medicine, The Politics of Healthcare Reform in Britain, Germany, and the United States. Professor Giamo, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
What happened in Massachusetts, Professor?
Well, it was definitely, I think, something that the Democrats were not expecting, this upset victory by Scott Brown. The question is how much of that was a repudiation of healthcare and how much of that was concern by voters of broader economic conditions like unemployment and the bank bailout and so on. It's hard to read, I think, at this point, but I think healthcare certainly figured in for some people.
I'm sure that Democrats are strategizing now in Washington and elsewhere. Do you have any clue what they're likely to do with healthcare reform at this moment?
I don't. I mean, I know that there are a couple of options being considered, and I think it's not certain what they'll go with. There is the one possibility is that the House passes the Senate bill as is, which would mean that a lot of liberal House Democrats would have to accept certain things they don't like, and they would have to pretty much abandon this reconciliation procedure between the two bills. But then they wouldn't have to return it to the Senate. The second option would be to the House passes the Senate bill as is and then tries to change it using a budget reconciliation procedure, but that would only apply to provisions of the bill that are related to the federal budget. And I think that would mean then that would only need the Senate then to vote with a simple majority, but it would mean scaling back a lot of the provisions in the bill that aren't budget-related. And I think this is a worry that then you would lose things like the insurance reforms that have been contained in both the House and the Senate bills. There are a couple other options that I don't think are very palatable. One is that the Senate rushes through a new bill before they seat Scott Brown, which seems highly unlikely to me. And then another option is that all the parties, the two parties, start over, go back to the drawing board, which I think is very, very fraught with uncertainty and would it could mean very well the death of any kind of health care reform bill happening.
People say that it's been rushed through so quickly, but when I think of the amount of time we've spent discussing this issue and how it's really been a focal point of this administration for a year now.
Yeah, I think it's been torturously slow, in fact, and I think part of that has to do with the way the Senate deliberates and makes decisions, and the initial decision to try to let Max Baucus get a bipartisan bill worked out last summer, which delayed a lot of things and then led to the August recess with the very, very contentious town hall meetings. And then coming back and just going with a Democrat bill, but then again having to try to negotiate and make sure it would muster the support of 60 senators to overcome a filibuster attempt. So that has, I think, slowed things down considerably. And I think, if anything, that the process has been longer than many people would have liked and given a lot of people time to worry and opponents to mobilize and people to become, I think, disenchanted.
Right. Somebody was talking, one of the analysts was talking last night, of taking this incrementally so that instead of taking this whole bill because so many people have different problems with different aspects of the bill, that you take one thing at a time. So you have a vote on one part of the health care reform bill, making more people insured. You have a vote on another, and it has to do with importation of drugs or whatever it happens to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then you might have more agreement if you just broke it down. Does that make sense?
Well, there is a possibility of doing that. I think the insurance reforms provisions, for example, are things that could pass in both houses. Both the House and Senate bills have those provisions in that, and the insurance industry has agreed to some of those, has accepted some of those changes, like forcing them to take people based on their medical history and not exclude them based on medical condition. The other thing, though, is if you were to just expand Medicaid, I think that would still, you could do that incrementally, too. It would still, though, lead to a federal outlay as well as a strain on state budgets. So I'm not sure that you could get that through. You may, and you could do that as a budget measure rather than a comprehensive bill. But I think a lot of people are worried that if you start expanding coverage without any kind of efforts at cost containment, that it's going to be a real burden for individuals and for the government.
Right. Let's go to more phone calls. Lynn is next from Racine. Hi, Lynn.
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking my
sure.
call, guys. I appreciate it. I'm a registered nurse, and I say that to only let you know that I do understand health care. I do believe that the Democratic Party failed. Democratic Party, the White House, failed in selling health care reform. I believe that the American people, quite frankly, these are people that watch, these various television shows, and they're not paying attention. I think you have to educate the public on why health care is associated with jobs. I mean, I've heard you guys talk this morning, and you said, oh, so much time has been spent on health care, and we've not talked about jobs. But there is a relationship between health care and jobs. Health care has dragged down employment, and I think get the pie charts out, do a YouTube video. They're good at that when Obama was running for office. Sell to the people and to the young people the way that they sold him to the American public when he was running for office. You have to look at this as a sales campaign. And I don't think they did a good job. Also, regarding the Kennedy seat, oh, my God, I think that's just devastating. I mean, the fact that the Kennedys and the White House knew that Ted was not doing well for at least a couple of years. You mean to tell me that there was no one that they could cultivate better than Coakley? I mean, give me a Kennedy cousin. Give me someone. But they had 2 years to work on getting a better candidate. And that's my comment. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're spot on with a lot of those comments.
Yeah, I agree. With the Kennedy seat, I don't know why they why Coakley ran such a lackluster campaign. And it reminds me of the campaign that Mitt Romney ran against the Democratic challenger then, and that person lost. I forget her name at the moment, but I lived in Massachusetts at the time, and she ran a very I think, complacent campaign, and I think maybe the Democrats just didn't see it on their radar and didn't think of, that it would be an issue because it's such a heavily Democratic state. But Massachusetts has a history of electing Republicans, at least for governor, and so it's not unheard of that this could have happened. As far as health care and its connection to jobs, I think you're right. There are the rising health care costs are leading many firms to drop coverage or to go out of business. And I think health care insurance and health insurance costs have enormous consequences for the economy. I think that message has been lost a bit, and I think a lot of it has been lost, too, in terms of the message about how you need to offer everyone decent coverage. I think people have gotten kind of bogged down in the costs and who's going to pay for it and whether it's going to be a tax on Cadillac plans or tax on
right.
wealthy individuals. And they really kind of, I think they did lose sight of the big picture.
Right. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Lynn, very much for your call. Saeed from Green Bay, hi.
Yes, thank you very much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
There is a certain thread of arrogance that runs through this dialogue coming from Democrats. And let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Your previous guest, I couldn't believe my ears when she said that it was so stupid to acknowledge the will of the people by seating the senator. The Democrats have dismissed opposition to health care reform as a right-wing extremism when it was in the form of feedback that they received in these town hall meetings, and now they dismiss the events in Massachusetts. Now, we have to remember Massachusetts has health care reform. They made a critical mistake. They expanded coverage without cost containment, and so they're bankrupt. Boston City Hospital has now a lawsuit against the state of Massachusetts for non-payment because they gave a ticket to every citizen of Massachusetts that they could go to the hospital and receive services, but they don't pay. They don't have the money to pay. And so the American people, the most recent poll in Wall Street Journal shows 44% against and only 33.4%. So the hiding behind parliamentary procedures and not engaging in real debate on this issue is not going to bode well for Democrats. On a previous show that you had on this, Kathleen, I called and I told you that you guys are writing the obituary of the Republican Party prematurely, that the opposition to health care reform is real. There are certainly pockets and areas that need attention, but Americans, particularly in this economic situation, are unwilling to look at far-reaching legislation that is not paid for.
Well, yeah, I wonder about that, Saeed. I've been following this issue pretty closely, and I know that you have, Professor Giammo.
Yeah.
That's what you do. There, it wasn't all that long ago that major reform, when you polled Americans, if you believed in them, that way over half of the American public wanted a public option in health care reform, which would have been an even more major reform. And they were upset
right.
that people caved into the pharmaceutical companies and the insurance companies.
Uh-huh.
So what's going on with this? It's just, it seems like the polls are all over the place. I don't know if there's substantial antagonism toward reform on the part of the American people.
I think a lot of people want expanded coverage. I think people do want something. They don't want to be seeing people going without insurance. And I also think they want a handle on costs because these are the twin problems and they feed on
right.
each other. But I think a lot of the opposition, the polls may show opposition to reform, but they don't always say why. And they can just say, do you approve or not, yes or no? And so there are, I think, some people who are just opposed to any role for government in healthcare
right.
or any part of the marketplace or whatever. And then there are others who are legitimately worried, I think, about the costs. And then there are others who are angry that are disappointed because the bill doesn't go far enough, because it would have dropped a public option, and that probably would not have been in the final legislation. So, you know, you have disappointment from both the left and the right and people who would probably consider themselves independents. But I think that the reason why people wanted, some analysts wanted the public option and some of these other aspects of the reform that some people are saying we should just breakdown and only pass incrementally, is that if you just expanded coverage without having figuring out a way to pay for it and without having something like the exchanges to force insurers to compete on price, and if you had a public option that would have exerted some market power with providers, that you were going to end up with runaway costs. I mean, I think what they were thinking was probably you would get this thing through and then have some cost provisions in place and then continue down that road as you can, as it unfolded.
Thanks, Saeed, for your call. Matt from Middleton, hi.
Hello, good morning.
Hi.
In watching the TV coverage last night, I think that we saw a pretty resounding call from the new senator in Massachusetts telling us why he won, and it was mainly because he was opposed to health care reform. And I hear a lot of the discussion shows and the newspaper articles and the internet blogs all downplaying that. And when he said, you know, if you think that this is unique to Massachusetts or unique to now and changes aren't made, either the health care bill is dropped or significantly changed, most Democrats are coming from states that are not heavily Democrat, like Massachusetts, are going to either be unseated or going to have their seats challenged quite strongly. And I think that what scared a lot of people about the current health care reform is all of the backdoor deals. I mean, you have deals being struck for the state of Nebraska, which is not fair to all of the other states. You have behind closed doors discussions that are not open for the public to view. You have Nancy Pelosi saying, we're going to pass only this bill and there's no discussion on it. That scares the American people. And you just can't come out and say, this is the way it's going to be and we're going to cram it through whether you like it or not.
Professor.
Yeah, I think, well, it's interesting because on the one hand, Scott Brown is opposed to this national level reform, but he voted for the Massachusetts reform, and the Massachusetts model is really the foundation of the national level reform. So I think it's kind of interesting that he was okay with it when it was his state, but now maybe for political reasons for political capital, he was against it at a national level. The other thing is, yes, there were all these backdoor deals cut, and maybe the problem was that they were trying to do this too much behind the scenes. And I think with certain senators, I think that was true. And again, that comes down to the filibuster problem in the Senate, that a couple of senators could derail the will of the majority, and a minority could block the will of the majority with just 40 votes. So I think that forced congressional leaders to do things that probably wasn't very wise from a public relations standpoint. But the other, as far as having negotiations with the providers and the pharmaceutical industry and the insurers, I think that's the way politics had to be. These are stakeholders that would have opposed reform otherwise and would have destroyed it. And I think you have to go with the reality that there are very powerful stakeholders in this system, and you have to somehow bring them inside your tent and put some limits on them. And if you can't do that, I mean, that's negotiation as well. And I don't, you know, I think they were afraid they didn't do that under the Clinton plan, that they excluded those interests and demonized them, and then those interests destroyed the plan. So I think the Obama administration thought it was wise to try to come to some agreement and get some of these powerful stakeholders on board, which I think they were right in doing.
One final question for you. I'm not sure if this is true or not, and this is what I've been thinking about since the election and will continue to think about, because I don't know what it means for how you govern these very disparate groups. Mm-hmm. First, do you think there's some truth? This came from somebody from MoveOn.org, and I heard it repeated last night by several analysts. The irony of the Massachusetts election results is that they show that independents and the progressive base are demanding the same thing. Isn't that something? An answer to the real anger in our country about why Wall Street is still flush and Main Street is still struggling. Americans want to see bold leadership from the party in power and a willingness to challenge the corporate control of our government.
Well, I think there is a lot of anger on the part of ordinary people who are seeing their money, the tax money, going to bank bailouts and so on, and unemployment rising. And I do agree. I think there has been, perhaps Obama has been a little too aloof and maybe needs to ride herd a little harder on House Democrats, especially, that he really needs to push a little harder and make a more visible visible presence on this whole debate. But I I understand there are a lot of people who really hate the insurance companies, and there are a lot of practices they do that are really awful and hurt a lot of people. But I don't think that this bill would necessarily let insurers and providers off the hook. And in Massachusetts, all those stakeholders came on board, and that's how it was enacted. So you end up having to make compromises, and in some cases, nobody's happy, but then everybody gets a little bit of something.
Right.
That's just the way it has to be in this kind of situation. Or you just have to probably go with very, very incremental, small bills.
Well, the next few months will be interesting as we look at all of this. Thank you so much, Professor Giammo, for being with us. Professor Susan Giammo with the Department of Political Science at Marquette University. She's a visiting assistant professor, and she is author of Markets in Medicine, The Politics of Healthcare Reform in Britain, Germany, and the United States. Judging from history, what direction should the president go now? What can he learn from other administrations? Professor James Marone, professor of political science and urban studies at Brown University and co-author of The Heart of Power, Health and Politics in the Oval Office, our next guest, and we'll keep taking more of your phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. And we have one line open. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program this Wednesday, Sean Carroll will join us. Perhaps you saw him on 60 Minutes, a fascinating piece a couple weeks ago, or maybe it was even last week. He's a professor of molecular biology and genetics and an investigator with the Howard Hughes Medical Institute at UW-Madison, a member of the National Academy of Sciences. He was interviewed talking about the possible return of the woolly mammoth. And he is the author of National Book Award finalist book, Remarkable Creatures, Epic Adventures in the Search for the Origin of Species. So that should be fun. All right, Professor James Marone is with us now, and we thank you very much, Professor, for being with us. Hello.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi. We're also going to talk about the return of the woolly mammoth, but in this case, Republicans.
And is it just the beginning of the return of the woolly mammoth?
This is really huge. It's a tsunami for the Democrats, and they have good reason to be, I think, very alarmed. Just a quick, we can talk about the election itself. People might be interested in exactly what happened, but maybe just to set the stage.
Sure.
Last week, the scenario that I thought, and I think most analysts expected to come to unfold in the following weeks, looked like this. In the next month, Barack Obama was going to get a health plan, and it was going to be pretty good. After a full year of screaming and yelling and having it run down, there would be a quite masterful ceremony in the Rose Garden with Obama. Well, actually, it's winter, so probably would be indoors. Obama would sign this thing, and suddenly the Democrats would have delivered something that they've been trying to deliver since 1915. It would have created a kind of positive momentum. Really, it's for the first time the Democrats would have produced something big from their electoral victory. After that, the sort of swing votes who weren't so sure might have started coming around to the Democrats for the next big debate, the one on global climate change. All that's gone now.
Oh,
it's not going to be. It's going to be very difficult to win the health bill now, although it's still possible. And that means the Democrats will face the voters next November, just 11 months from now, with possibly nothing to show for their victory. And that has Democratic strategists just terrified. The whole scenario, and the Obama people did almost everything right, but the whole scenario now goes up in smoke.
Isn't that something? And Ted Kennedy's seat to boot. Which is...
What a huge, huge irony.
Yes.
That Ted Kennedy, who spent one of the five greatest senators in American history, watches the issue that he fought so hard and long for go up in smoke in an election. It may not go up in smoke. We'll have to see. It really depends on how much guts the Democrats have. But go up in smoke, possibly, in an election to fill his seat.
How do you explain the Democrats must have known how important this seat was, and certainly Ted Kennedy made it very clear that health care reform was the issue of his life again and again. How did they get it so wrong here? Why wasn't she a strong campaigner out shaking hands with everybody? And did they just ignore it? It's hard to believe they let this one go.
In retrospect, it is really hard to believe. And there's lots and lots of finger-pointing today. Washington is full of finger-pointers. But what the Democrats were focused on, they had now done something nobody had ever done, and that is to actually pass health reform through two chambers. And they were completely focused on hammering out a compromise bill that Democrats could feel roughly good about. There were things in the Senate bill that the House hated and that Labor hated and the Liberals. And Kathleen, are you still in?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay. And so the Democrats were so focused on these negotiations, which actually seemed to be going pretty well. Labor appeared to be ready to sign off on some of the things it didn't like that worked out compromises. So that's one thing. Secondly, it's Massachusetts. It's 3-1 Democratic right. to Republican. Obama won it by 20 points going away. Coakley seemed to just be gliding to victory, and it didn't occur to anybody that there was going to be a race here. So she wasn't campaigning very hard. She wasn't doing very many events. She wasn't really using her huge advantage in money. And then the Tea Party people got a hold of Massachusetts. About 3 weeks ago, they started to pour resources and money in, and Scott Brown found his words, which is, we're going to stop Barack Obama. We're going to stop health care. We're going to stop cap and trade. We're going to stop the agenda dead in its tracks. For Republicans, this was thrilling. Democrats were still, well, we really wanted single payer. We don't really like health care. We haven't really seen anything. Obama administration, there's a war on us. Get it? Democrats were dispirited. They were, and so in the combination of attention in Washington, huge excitement among the Republicans, and a kind of disappointment among the Democrats. After all, the Washington process is making sausages, and it's really kind of unsavory. So what the single key to this thing was the excitement generated by the Republicans and the disenchantment of the Democrats. The vote turnout is always lower in off-year elections, so it was down from 73% in the presidential to 54%, but the largest turnout was in Boston, which was down 34%. Largest drop in turnout was in Boston, and that's where the Democrats have to pile up their big majorities. So Boston didn't come out and vote. The suburbs and rural areas did. And the Democrats got just shocked. But in retrospect, you think, why didn't the White House look? Why didn't the Senate look? Why didn't the governor look? But everybody just took it for granted until it got away from them.
Right. So if you were advising, and maybe you will be, the president this week, in order to get some form of health care reform passed during the next couple months, which the president has made his key issue right now as well, how, looking at other administrations from Harry Truman onward, how should he proceed?
Okay, first let's talk about the options they have, and then the lesson from history, and a very strong lesson from history here, Kathleen. Options. The most obvious option is the Democratic Senate has passed the bill. You're not going to get 60 votes again from the Democratic Senate. But they have passed the bill now. What the House could do is hold their nose and say, okay, we'll go along with the Senate bill. All that would take is a vote in the House. The Democrats have the votes. Now, the things they really hate about the bill, they could fix in about a month in the budget process. So, for example, they think the bill is too stingy in the subsidy it provides for people above poverty who need help in buying private insurance. That's the biggest thing in the bill for liberals. They think this is how the Senate didn't put enough money in. There's nothing to stop them to amend the budget, putting that money in, and the budget only need 50 votes. You can't 51 votes. You can't filibuster the budget in the Senate. So one path to victory for the Democrats here is pass it with the Senate pass in the House and fix it in the budget, put more money in and so forth. Whether they have the guts to do that is the great question. Now, the lesson from history. The lesson from history, I think, is really illustrated in comparing Bill Clinton with Harry Truman. Bill Clinton had health reform. It went down in flames. Partially it went down in flames because the Republicans made a very shrewd calculation. We've found the memos now, and the memos basically say, look, if the Democrats pass this thing, they're going to reconnect with the middle class, and we Republicans are going to be out on our ears for years. We got to kill this thing and make sure the fingerprints are not, that our fingerprints aren't on the body. They succeeded in killing it, and what did the Clinton administration do? They walked away from health reform. Bill Clinton, who had been so brilliant in his speeches speaking for health reform when it was in play, now ignores it. And in his autobiography says simply, I felt bad for Hillary. Where were all those moving speeches about people losing everything because a child got sick? Gone.
Right,
so what happened?
Right.
The spin became the Republicans saved us from a terrible health reform. Compare Harry Truman. He lost even worse than Clinton did, but he never quit fighting. He always said, I believed in this. And 15 years later, when the Democrats passed Medicare, they signed it in front of Harry Truman because he was so feisty, because he had continued to fight for it. Johnson went out. His aides told him, don't. That'll remind us of socialized medicine. Johnson said, no. The number one Medicare card goes to Harry Truman. It's his reform. Hmm. What the Democrats have to remember now is that pulling back makes them seem like the party of opportunism. The party that doesn't really stand for anything. They have to remember the lesson of Harry Truman. Even when you lose, take your principles and fight for them.
Mm. I love that analysis. Let's go to some phone calls for you. Let's go to Joe from Lafarge. Hi, Joe.
Hey,
Hi,
Joe.
How are you this morning?
Good. How are you?
Good. I can't help but think when I'm looking at this whole thing that I'm witnessing an elaborate charade. Now, when NAFTA and GATT had to be passed, we had bipartisan support. Everybody came together and passed them. Now, I think what they really want to do is offer you a picture of a piece of cake and not give you a real piece of cake. Now, the reason I think that is with Massachusetts, they had to know what was going on with Kennedy's seat, and they dropped the ball. Now, I can't really believe that these people, as shrewd as they are, let that happen. And I feel like I'm witnessing a fixed fight that either party.
Yeah, you know, that's an excellent metaphor and a good point. But you know, this has happened before. The Democrats get into office, their supporters are thrilled. Their supporters then see how ugly the congressional process is and get disenchanted. The real secret of this is in the low turnout in Boston. The people who were just so excited, almost with a religious fervor about Barack Obama, they got too high. And then when they saw the boring process, you know, all this negotiation, they became disenchanted. The Republicans, on the other hand, were on a mission from God. They just had to stop this whole thing, this whole Obama thing. So this is, you know, there are two sides quite evenly matched fighting for control of our government. And there's nothing to get your party going quite like seeing the other guys take over. Do you remember how the Democrats thrived when George Bush was in office? Democrats only seem to win when there's a Bush in the White House. Now that Obama's in the White House, the Republicans are getting the same jolt of electricity. I hear what you say. It looks like a fixed fight. How could you lose in Massachusetts? But the answer for all our votes are really, how jazzed are your people? And right now, the Democrats are just kind of dispirited, and the Republicans are truly jazzed.
Yeah. Let's go to one more phone call. We have about a minute left, and it's Jim from Norwalk. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. Morning, sir. Morning, ma'am.
Hi, Jim.
Thank you for letting me comment. I have two comments and then I'm kind of looking for your comments. One is, and I thought it then, and I see it now, when the previous Republican administration, with the help of both the Democrats and the Republicans, passed the bank bailout, in the public's mind, any federal discretionary funds were spent. They've been given to the banks. And the problem with health care reform now stems from this perception that we can't afford it.
All right, I need to hold you at that thought because we're almost out of time.
I think that's certainly been the image, and it's been projected brilliantly by the Republican Party, which is, after all, fighting to get back into office. The bank bailout is not clear it's going to end up costing us money. Ironically, we as taxpayers may end up net winners on the bank reform, but that's very hard to explain. And you're really raising a second issue, and that's the issue of populism. People are kind of angry. It's a very hard economic time, and Obama, candidate Obama, tapped into that anger. President Obama, very cerebral, very policy-focused, has lost that well root of popular anger. And the Republicans, not least of whom Sarah Palin, have discovered that anger. And I think that is implicit in your point, and it's very important.
Mm-hmm. Professor Maroon, you're so good. Thanks so much for being with
us. Thanks for having me. It's always great to talk to you, Kelly.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the air. James Maroon, professor of political science and urban studies at Brown University, co-author of a great book, The Heart of Power, Health and Politics in the Oval Office. We thank Rhonda Fanning for producing this really interesting hour. And thanks to John Anderson, who's helping us out these days, for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll return with talk about woolly mammoths and more. So stay with us. It'll be a great hour. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.